you know, to go back to what I said earlier, it's having every person at Wealth Kernel adding value, they do. Like, you know, we have a really great complement of people, but it's continuing to hiring on that basis of people who, yeah, believe in what we're trying to do and are going to give it their all to get us through that.
Chris, really, really pleased to be chatting with you today. Thank you so much for joining us and for your time as well. Great to have you with us. For our listeners, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself to kick things off?
Yep, no worries, Laura. Nice to be here too. Nice to meet you. So I've worked in financial services now for 16 years and a bit, pretty much straight out of uni. I was working with Barclays for the first 10 years, started down to honestly just a temp role that then became permanent, then moved into portfolio management and then kind of portfolio management operations. I ended up there as a head of centralized investment proposition for the last couple of years that I worked there. And then an opportunity came up. So I knew Karan, Wealth Kernel CEO at Barclays. He actually was on my team there, and then he left to start Wealth Kernel, and then he got in touch to say they were looking for someone to head up the operations department. So now I'm on his team. So it's a nice little switch around there in terms of seniority. So I joined Wealth Kernel in 2016. Very back end of 2016, early 2017. So I've been here now for over 5 years, originally as director of operations. Mm. And then this year, that role, I've moved up to COO role of the company as we've just grown and scaled over time. That's kind of all very formal corporate history you asked me about myself. other than that, yeah, I my background is a politics degree, so yeah. I never really imagined working in finance back when I was 18, but I'm sure my 18-year-old self would be horribly appalled, but genuinely enjoyed it, and it has become something I like, and I hope I'm good at. Other stuff we'll talk about as we go through, I'm sure.
Awesome. And it's interesting, I think, to, especially at those early stages, a lot of the time founders, CEOs do sort of think about their network and who they've worked with previously, because for you transitioning into the role that you're in now from Barclays is taking a massive leap, right? You've gone from corporate to that startup environment. So it always helps to know the person that you're kind of jumping that ship with.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have complete faith in Karan. In fact, my wife and I had him and his now wife over for dinner back when we worked at Barclays. Yeah. And after he left, she said, "I think he's going to be a millionaire one day." And I tell that story and it sounds trite, but it is genuinely true. So when he said, "Oh, would you be interested?" I was like, "Yep, sure, I'll come work for you. No worries."
So really, your wife had a crystal ball?
A little bit, yeah. I hope so.
Awesome. And can you just tell me, to kick us off as well, a little bit more about Wealth Kernel's mission and vision? Like, what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah, sure. So I'd say the Wealth Kernel's primary goal is to, the way I see it, is democratize investment. So what our aim is to make it easier for smaller companies and for people, you know, fintech startups like we were, but also for people who haven't been brought up on the idea of investing in their lives. Like, investing just hasn't been part of, not something their parents did, or it's not something they've had any like exposure to, because we don't give any exposure to investment through most education, to give them access to the markets in a simple, straightforward, easy way. So we try to build, you know, easy to use APIs that companies can then, fintech companies can link into reach multiple markets. We're expanding our base of products, so we've got different things for different types of clients out there. So whatever investment experience they choose, if that's, you know, discretionary management, if it's XO, that they can come in and they can access things that company itself might not be able to access. And hopefully it's put in terms that client, that individual can understand without, you know, the massive reams of jargon or paperwork that can often come from going to a more traditional institution.
Yeah, that's an awesome mission. I think something that's massively needed as well, especially from a sort of democratizing access to it perspective, because you're so right. Like, we don't get educated about investment, and it seems to be sort of The few that end up going into that kind of, you know, that route, right? So actually, if we can just make it a lot more accessible to everybody and less scary, easier to understand, easier point of entry, it really does democratize it. So awesome mission.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that it looks complex from the outside. And of course, there are huge complexities to the financial market. But actually, for an individual to come along, and especially right now with spiraling inflation, cost of living crisis, you know, pensions, risks, and all the other stuff, this is, you know, it's a space that more people should be in to protect themselves, their family, their loved ones.
But like I said, the markets are complex and one does have to be careful with their investments. Returns are never guaranteed and it's always good to get independent financial advice. Value of investments can go down as well as up, and that depends on the markets at that point in time.
If you think about it, this just came to mind. Like, if you think about it, a car is incredibly complex on the inside. An engine, the way a car functions, you know, it's incredibly complex, yet we all have access to a car. Like, exactly. The sort of the, you know, user and the product and the way that they interact, not necessarily everything that goes behind it. So yeah, I love that. And you mentioned you came on board as director of operations. You're now COO at Wealth Kernel. What's the journey look like for you since you joined? You've obviously been with the business through what has been some pretty tough times over the last couple of years or so, with the pandemic especially. So I'd love to hear a bit more about, yeah, what it's looked like for you.
No, absolutely. So, I mean, it's interesting, right at the beginning, you said, you know, the transition between working for a company such as Barclays and then a company such as Wealth Kernel, huge. Mm-hmm. And it took a while for that mentality of that big corporate infrastructure to sink in. Like, actually, we can do whatever we want, quotation marks. You know, we can move fast, we can move agile, and that's certainly been our focus for us. So I think those first few years pre-pandemic as director of operations, it was, you know, preparing to scale and then scaling fast in terms of our processes, procedures, the way that our technology linked with our people, you know, bringing in a small operations team, and getting them like set up in a way that we could trade fast and trade efficiently for the clients. But then what also came into my role, and this is kind of where things have moved towards the COO route and why that kind of became a natural fit, and I'll talk in a bit. I'm not a traditional COO in some of the things that I do, but is that I took over a lot of the relationship management of our business clients. Okay. And then so underneath me, they kind of developed the customer service team as well. And then we also have brought in investments and SIPs, and that's all sort of grown up underneath me in my world. And now I've got heads of each of those departments. So I'm suddenly in a position now where I'm kind of linking those up with our sales and marketing team, with our recruitment head of people, with our head of compliance. And so I work kind of at a high level amongst all of those. And that's really been the evolution of my role at Wealth Kernel. Has just been, I've been here long enough that I largely know everything that we do most of the time anyway, and so can be, you know, a good resource to bring all that together. I think for in terms of the pandemic, the last 2 years we were positioned in a really good place, not that anything was really good during the pandemic, but because we were a remote company, we didn't have to suddenly struggle to how's everyone going to work from home. We were already doing that. We were already basically a paper-free business. We relied on technology to do everything. So yes, it's been tough. We've obviously had to, you know, keep an eye on the markets, and you say it's been the last tough 2 years. I think we're going to be into year three of it being even tougher, I think, in the financial space. But in terms of the way we run ourselves as a business, we were set up and ready to do that. And what's been really interesting is seeing how the rest of the industry has moved more towards us. So, you know, 3 years ago, things like, you know, ISA transfers, for example, so many of those companies still insist on paper forms. Some are still asking for wet signatures or, God forbid, faxes. All that's gone now. And that's been great.
But you're also like, we were doing this.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, you can be a bit smug about it. Yeah, a little bit.
You're allowed. That's super interesting. And I think there are a couple of things that you said there. And probably initially with that role of yours now overseeing multiple functions of the business, like the role of COO is like, how do you best operationalize what you're doing? And actually that can be from the sort of, you know, recruitment, the customer success, the B2B side of things. And you're almost like that connective tissue, right? Like operationally, how are all of these functions moving at the same speed and how are they connecting? So like having that kind of connective tissue role where you've got that holistic view of each of those functions and if operationally they're working as well as they could be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's certainly what I'm now trying to be. Now we've got some brilliant people in to kind of head up each of those departments. I don't have to be involved in the day-to-day of those areas and can spend more time, as you say, looking at the operational focus, looking at the strategy alongside Karan and the rest of the exec board. So it's been a journey.
And just a bit busy.
I would say I'm never very rarely bored. Very rarely bored.
Nice. A new challenge every day.
Yep.
Awesome. And yeah, I think what you mentioned finally about that, you know, the sort of industry catching up with yourself and your team, obviously being remote first from launch. Yeah, you were able to see everybody sort of having to transition to that. We were in a similar situation at Seed because we've been remote first since 2013. Everything we do is set up to be optimized to be remote. So when it all happened, it was sort of like, oh, we've been doing this for a while, but like, how do we share that knowledge? How do we like make sure that, you know, we've tried and tested things. Here are a few things that other people can try. So it is interesting because it was almost sort of 10 years of innovation within the matter of what, 2 months when we realized that there would be a global lockdown. Yeah. So when pressure's put on, good things can come out of it.
Absolutely. And it's difficult. And even now I'd say we still face, you know, challenges with it. I think training's quite difficult. New joiners, you don't have that experience of sitting next to someone and kind of hearing what they're doing and saying, oh, can I ask a question about that? So we have to find ways of making that, finding artificial ways of making that natural experience that we had back in when we all worked in offices still happen and still be easily accessible so people can learn and develop and grow.
And it's quite helpful. I've seen this especially recently. It's like new bits of tech emerging that are connecting those dots.
Definitely.
Like I'll have to find this actually and send it to you afterwards. But as an aside, this bit of tech, I've always worked in a remote office. So my previous company was in Australia. I was in the London office and I was working closely with the product team. I was like, I just wish I could be a fly on the wall in some of those conversations where I just absorb and I don't need an active conversation with somebody, but I need to just listen to the decision-making process and, you know, why they're doing what they're doing. And there's now a bit of tech that does that. Essentially, you have like these virtual office environments that you're logged into on your desktop and you can hear and have a chat. And I just think it's brilliant what people are now building.
That's amazing. I haven't seen that. Yeah, I'd love to have a look at that.
I'll dig it out and find the link and share it with you.
Great.
right, back to Wealth Kernel.
Sure.
So the company has been nominated for Wealth Tech Company of the Year at the FinTech London Awards. So firstly, massive congrats on that. Such an achievement and really, really good recognition as well of the work that you're doing and what you're building. Your team is now, is it 50 odd people?
I think we've just surpassed 60. I think we're into the 60s now. Yep.
Nice. And on that sort of talent and people front, what's your approach been to really building and scaling that team to where it is today?
Sure. So I mean the high level answer is maybe a little cliched, but it's trust, it's transparency, and it's mutual respect. And it's showing that from the highest level all the way down. I can honestly say that I don't think I've ever heard anyone raise their voice in a harsh way at Wealth Kernel. Like we just have an understanding that people will treat one another with a level of respect, that everyone is here to, you know, to do a good job. to everyone cares about what they're doing, everyone's passionate about what they're doing, so let's trust in one another of that. Of course, you know, people make mistakes. When you do, it's having that level of, you know, responsibility that everyone's wanting to just put their hand up and say, made a mistake, this is what it is, let's get it resolved. And largely, I think we've got that down. We aim for, you know, everyone should feel valued, everyone's opinion should be respected. I think for a long time, we definitely said we were a flat culture. I think naturally there has to be a bit of hierarchy that evolves over time. You get to a certain size where you just can't, like, we are now getting to a point where I don't necessarily know everyone who joins the company at any single point in time, because we've just got that many people now in. But still, we're still a business where the most junior person can get face-to-face time with someone on the exec board without any trouble at all. In fact, they're likely to be in a meeting with them, and their voice counts for just as much when being asked for feedback. And we've developed a strong kind of exec team, which has our head of people on it, who largely oversees the recruitment side of things, and then myself, and then our head of compliance, our CTO, and Karan, the CEO as well. And we have the culture we have at that level, we like to see throughout the company. So the way we do our meetings, you know, making sure people are acting in a similar way.
Yeah. Brilliant. No, that sounds, it sounds like you've built the team in a really, dog's hair. it sounds like you've built the team in a really, with a positive culture from the off. And as you say, you know, having it reflective of the way that you operate as an exec and leadership team, and permeating that down as well, which is brilliant. And I think with, especially that like early stage tech company, you want people to make mistakes. Like if you're not making mistakes, like, are you innovating? Are you pushing? And I had a really good conversation with one of the engineering leads at Delivery Hero a few weeks back. And he said, you know, there's parts that you do have to play it safe, but actually you need those individuals or teams that give it that kind of 10x, they push it a bit, because otherwise you stagnate, right? Which I think is interesting.
No, definitely. You learn from the errors you make, and hopefully you do better next time, and you find solutions for it. So absolutely.
Brilliant. And as COO, like what collaboration and involvement do you have sort of with the talent, people side of the business? Like you mentioned that, you know, you've got a head of people who mainly manages that side. Like, is workforce planning, operationalizing recruitment, is that something that you get involved in, and how does it tie in with the other functions that you're focused on?
Sure. I think largely it is still shared across the exec board. There's a certain amount of autonomy that each area has control over its own recruitment where need is. We'll talk about that as a wide overarching strategy. And so certainly I'm involved in those conversations because we're all talking about them, but it's not so much. And I think, you know, I think I said earlier, you know, I don't necessarily meet the full criteria of what a traditional kind of corporate style COO might do, and this is one of those areas where that hasn't come under my full wheelhouse yet. But that's kind of fun. Again, it's been natural development, and the way we've got it working right now is working quite well. I think, yeah, our recruitment is led by the people team, and it's led by need and resource and kind of like the vision path of how we're going to grow. That's kind of what we drive towards, and so our hiring is quite tactical across the company. Obviously it has to be, you know, we've got to be strategic in the way that we do that. And we have some certain growth areas which I think we'll get to in a little bit, that right now, which is where our focus is.
Nice. And maybe we will get to that now.
Okay.
If you look for the next sort of 12 to 18 months, what are those focuses for Wealth Kernel as a business? What are you really prioritizing?
So as with, I think, any fintech scale-up, we've got a lot of plates spinning in the air, and I'd like to add a few more just to look even more impressive or terrifying. Pick your adjective here, but our main three focuses right now are accumulation SIPs. We recently started offering consolidation SIPs on our platform in the last 6 to 8 months. So we want to add accumulation SIPs to that.
Can you tell me a bit more about what those are?
I can, absolutely. So consolidation SIP has become more of a popular thing in the UK, especially with people moving jobs more regularly. So because everyone's now got a workplace pension, you can very quickly rack up 4, 5, 6 pensions, yeah, you know, before you're in your mid-30s. And so the offering is now there to bring those pensions together under one place, into one wrapper. Yeah. You don't top them up or anything, but at least they're all in one place and you can go and look at them as one whole holistic thing. An accumulation SIP is more of the traditional style. You're literally setting up your own self-invested personal pension, yeah, under one of the companies that works with us. And right, that's what we want to roll out this year, because especially those companies that use our tech that are trying to provide a fully rounded investment experience. So it's not just you can have an investment account. It's, do you want an ISA? Do you want a JISA for your kids? Do you want, do you want a savings account, etc.? Then yeah, we want to add pensions into that as well. So that can be something that they can bring in under that world.
Brilliant. Thank you for that.
No, that's quite all right. So the other two things are, we're looking to expand into Europe. And that's something we're working on very heavily over the last 18 months. And we want to be able to offer intraday trading for direct equities. So right now, our trading is on a day-by-day basis, but there's a huge amount of demand out there right now, which we see in other fintech companies that are providing this, to be able to trade throughout the day while the markets are open. You can buy and sell, manage your own investments. Mm-hmm. And so we're integrating with brokers right now to make that possible. And that, and you said 12 to 18 months. I've only really focused on the next 6 in that. but those 3 things by the end of this year, that would feel like a huge achievement, a big milestone for us. Have moved into those things.
So are you live in the UK at the moment?
Yes.
And do you know which countries that in the rest of Europe you're sort of focused on or hoping to launch to next?
We're looking at Spain and Lithuania, are the two countries.
Awesome, very exciting. Well, best of luck with those. And is it just a market launch? Are you building teams there, or?
So we already have people working in both those countries and in other countries as well. Again, being remote, we've been able to be hire reasonably wherever we want. Yeah. So we've got quite a large it's got to be getting close to 15% of Wealth Kernel team is now in Spain. Got a couple of people in Lithuania and a few people elsewhere too.
Yeah. And having those people on the ground there is so incredibly valuable, like not just from a presence perspective, but also to be able to feed back and to understand the sort of cultural nuances and what might be different there. Hugely, hugely valuable. So
absolutely. And I've never worked outside the UK. And so it's a big learning experience, not just from opening a company in those countries, but also the regulatory environment, the financial environment over there is so different. And so it's learning about that and learning how that works and how to marry up the UK offering with these new parts of the company.
Yeah, brilliant. And the benefits of being able to have a remote team, right, is having people in all of these different locations. So
exactly.
Awesome. Well, hopefully we can catch up once you've launched there and we'll hear what a success it's been and some of the learnings.
Happily. Look forward to tell you all about it.
Awesome. So for you, what have been some of the biggest learnings in your journey so far, whether that's at Wealth Kernel or Barclays previously, especially when it comes to sort of building and leading teams?
So I think Karan would probably say the strength I have is that people like me and people will do things and want to do a good job because of that. Like without sounding too egotistical, I know I'm a good manager. I'm good at managing people. I'm good at managing teams. I'm good at helping develop people, supporting people. And I do like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I like people to allow people to have the time to make mistakes, to grow and learn. It's not about coming in and being perfect, but coming in and becoming really good at your job over time through experience. A weakness I have is that I like people, and sometimes that benefit of the doubt can't be extended forever. And I think I have had to learn that not everyone is going to be as passionate or as driven about something that you are, and not everyone's going to buy into something as intense and stressful that fintechs can be at times, and that's okay. And it's learning to recognize that, and it's learning to say to people, you know what, you've been great, this has worked really well, but this is, you know, we're going in different directions here, without like internalizing that too much. So I think learning to be a little bit more dispassionate is the wrong word, because I think I always care. You never want to upset anyone, you never want to hurt anybody, but I think learning to just be direct, and it's not a personal thing, it's not a, you know, you might upset someone by being honest, but the honesty still matters, and as long as it is put across in a kind, considerate, empathetic way, that is literally the best you can do. You cannot be all things to all people.
That's a great bit of advice, and a big learning as well. Something that I'm also learning.
It's hard.
And I think as well, like, something like what you were saying, like passion and that kind of commitment to the vision, and something that is quite difficult, that is actually tough to take into account in a recruitment process. Like, how do you measure passion for something? How do you measure tenacity or resilience? Like, that's really hard to say beforehand, yes, this person has this, until they are within that environment. And that's probably the toughest thing, because how do you do that? I don't know if you can.
In an hour-long interview, I think it's nearly impossible. Yeah. I think you have to, you know, kind of rely on their track record and rely on how they put themselves across, and then there is an element. There's an element of trust in recruitment process on both sides. You know, you're trusting that they're going to come in and do B and who what they say they are, but they're trusting you that you're going to take care of them, and that you are going to be the environment you purport yourself to be. I think we've all interviewed for jobs, in the past. I mean, mine was a long time ago, but certainly back when I was just doing random jobs as a student or whatever, you'd interview for a job and they go, oh, it's this and that, and you'd start to be like, it's none of those things.
You're so right, and that's something that I was speaking with our head of TA about, or she mentioned actually previously, is you almost not yeah kind of there's an anti-sell element of recruitment. Like, you want to be able to say, especially in a startup and a, you know, fast-growing company, you want to be able to say, it's really hard, like, sometimes you're going to come across this barrier and this, and it's not all going to be sort of roses, like, it's gonna be tough. And I think being honest, you have a duty to do that as a manager and as a company, is to say, this is what you should expect, and, you know, warts and all.
definitely, absolutely. You know, it's important to make people feel excited about the proposition, but as you say, just to be reasonably direct about how it is going to be. And that's okay. Nothing's perfect, you know, but as long as I think the other thing I've learned is that I like a challenge. And I probably didn't really know that about myself before Barclays. I mean, not before Barclays, during Barclays, maybe the last couple of years when I took on that last role there, that was hard. And that I got really like into. But Wealth Kernel, like, again, it sounds trite, but it's genuinely true. I am excited by what we're trying to do. It's sometimes incredibly tough, and sometimes, you know, like, I need a weekend, but I am excited by it. And there's no time where, like, you're just kind of clock watching or waiting for the day to end or anything like that. If anything, you're like, slow down, please. I could do like the 10 hours. I am a bit of a night owl, so I do like that feeling of sometimes I'll work a bit late into the evening, and, you know, solving a problem at kind of 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night, and thinking, oh, this is going to improve things tomorrow. That's always quite a good feeling.
Yeah, you can go to bed happy.
Yeah.
Knowing that you've got one less thing to tackle in the morning.
Exactly, yeah.
And obviously, like, we've all seen news articles on the, you know, macroeconomy and how this is impacting the tech space. And yeah, it's pretty overwhelming right now, to be honest. And at Wealth Kernel, you're continuing to hire and scale your team. Is it business as usual for you, or are there certain measures that you're really taking to make sure you're set up for success and ready for what could be potentially bumpy road ahead?
Yeah, we're in a very strong position. Fortunately, we had a funding round just before the close, just before Christmas, which has given us a fair bit of runway. So from that point of view, that's a real positive. And we definitely see a huge amount of growth coming in terms of what we're offering and in terms of propositions that we have in the pipeline for companies that want to work with us, etc. Obviously, there's no getting away from the threat of a global slowdown, the national recession, cost of living crisis, layoffs, everything in the UK and elsewhere right now. But it is going to be a tough time. I think it's going to be a very hard year for a lot of people. So yes, BAU. Yes, we continue to grow. I think we hire smart. We're looking to bring in people with experience and knowledge and drive. Now it's not so much the old days where it was, we just need some hands to do some stuff. Now it's like, who can we bring in who knows about this thing, who can really add immediate value to push it forward, and to bring help and assistance to the team. I think that will accelerate the speed at which we can move forward and hopefully allow us to push through whatever happens in the UK and in the world as well. I think, to go back to what I said earlier, it's having every person at Wealth Kernel adding value, they do. We have a really great complement of people, but it's continued to hiring on that basis of people who believe in what we're trying to do and are going to give it their all to get us through that.
So really just taking that sort of intentional approach to hiring and scaling and making sure that you are continuing to grow, but with the right people,
exactly,
in the right roles, and that brings with it sustainability, right? And reliability as well.
Definitely.
Awesome. And with this, I suppose it's tough for business owners not to sort of feel nervous or feel the need to react in accordance with the market. Like, from your perspective and, obviously from Barclays and Wealth Kernel now, like, what would your advice be for making it through those tougher times? Like, what do you feel COOs and leaders out there should be prioritizing and really just thinking about right now?
I think I'm quite a cautious person in general in life. I think the biggest risk when things start to look unstable is to act fast and overcorrect. And you see that in different industries, and occasionally it's the right call, of course it is, but I think you've always got to be cautious about just reacting to yesterday's news and taking that more global, high level holistic view, giving it time, holding your breath for just a little bit can often really help. I think if you have a plan and a vision of it's something you believe in, and you know where you're going, and you know it's going to add value, and you've got the right people around you and the financial ability as well, of course, then if you can stay the course, making small adjustments where necessary, I feel that pays dividends in terms of the long-term strategy rather than massively swinging one way to the other. In terms of the industry, like, people still going to need investment, even if inflation continues to climb, even if we see interest rates go kind of 1970s, 1980s levels again, which is all possible. I think we all have to accept this could happen. The market falls out of bed. People are still going to need pensions. They're still going to want tax-free wrappers. They're likely going to want more of that to put more money away to try and beat inflation on savings rates or investment rates elsewhere, just to try and secure themselves. So I don't think we should be blasé about this at all. I think, most of us, I'm in my kind of late 30s, and I think a lot of us in the fintech space are, in an age range where we probably haven't experienced an economic period like this before.
Yeah.
So it is uncertain, and that's disconcerting. I don't think anyone's going to get all the calls right, but the fundamentals of society, I suppose, is what I believe in. They're not going to change.
Yeah.
People still need the services that they needed yesterday. They're still going to need them tomorrow.
Yeah. And I suppose it's that, you know, taking that, as you said, taking a breath, and rather than being reactive, be proactive and intentional and a bit more, yeah, like what could potentially be coming and what potential changes can I make, as opposed to going, right, I'm reacting to the market and this is a massive drastic change that I'm making. Like, think about it in phases, think about it in steps, because it is, you know, it is going to be a tough time. I think everybody knows that, but it's cyclical, right? Like, this good times will come around again, and it's a matter of how you kind of steady yourself through these times and sort of make sure that you're in a good position, that when we do come back around, you know, you're ready and fit and fighting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the same strategy as investing. And obviously I am not here to give investment advice, and markets can go down as well as up, etc. But, you know, there is something in, if, you know, if the market drops, you don't necessarily want to immediately sell everything. Yes. Just hold, you know, hold on.
Yeah, brilliant. And for you and from your experience, are there any real sort of pitfalls, mistakes that you've seen made, you know, even sort of advice that you're sort of like, what? Why are people telling people that? That you'd really want to say to fellow COOs or business leaders out there to avoid, like anything to really beware of when it comes to sort of building and scaling a business that you've witnessed over the years?
Don't overpromise. It's, you know, I would always rather to surprise a customer with functionality they weren't expecting than tell them it's coming in 3 months and 6 months later saying it's coming in 2 months. I think we've all done that. Everything looks easier than it is to build, especially, you know, when you're talking technology, when you're talking complex technology, which is replacing things that used to be done by, you know, a team of 30 people each dealing with 20 or 30 clients each. Now you want one system to deal with 1,000 clients, but do the same amount of work. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's still important to strive for excellence, but I think it's getting people to buy into the idea of releasing solid systems, solid APIs and products over time, with very much that MVP approach, which is minimum viable product. I think that has huge value. You can give someone something simple that works, make it better over time, rather than trying to give them the top shelf product
all singing, all dancing.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a great bit of advice, and it is something that I've definitely witnessed. You know, it takes so long to build trust, especially as an early stage company, but it can take one mistake, one day, one overpromise to break that trust. And actually, it's so much more important to maintain or build brand integrity when you're an early stage company. Like, integrity in your product equals integrity in your brand, and that is much more sustainable in the long term. So I think that's a brilliant bit of advice. And if you can just pick one, if you could wave a magic wand and something when it comes to building and leading teams, what would that be?
That not everyone is a natural manager. And that's okay, but that managing people is as an important skill as the role that you've hired that person to do. Someone shouldn't just become a manager just because they've reached a certain level of seniority within the company. Mm. If they're going to be, they should be trained and taught that skill. And I think so few companies invest in that. Yeah. And I'd love to see that become a much more like important part of a business. That, cool, you've done really well, we've promoted you, you should now take in your own team to run this project. Have you ever managed anyone before? Do you know how to do pastoral care and how to talk to people and how to do one-to-ones and how to delegate work and how to help someone develop and how to deal with, you know, complaints and bad days and, you know, health issues?
Yeah,
because not everyone does. In fact, most people have had no experience of doing that until they're suddenly thrust into it. Like, you can do this now. And that is so detrimental. We've all had, I suspect, no, I have, we've had bad managers in the past. And it's so demoralizing. It's so awful. And I think it hurts companies so much. And I think it was such an easy way just to improve things if we all accepted that not everyone's a manager. And if you want someone to be a manager, train them.
Yeah, because a lot, and you see this quite often with early stage companies. Somebody, and we spoke to Mishka Katkov from Savage Game Studio about this, I remember vividly. Somebody could be an amazing individual contributor, like unbelievable at as an engineer at code, you know, fantastic. That doesn't mean that they're an amazing manager. So just because they're at the top of their game as an IC, don't just shift them to a manager because that's the next, you know, development space that you think they should go into. Like, it doesn't work like that. And yeah, it's really risky because especially when, you know, retention, employee engagement is so key to holding on to a fantastic team that you've taken months and months, years sometimes to build. Like, people leave bad managers, and that's hugely, hugely important. So yeah, I hear you. I agree. If only we actually had that magic wand, hey?
Absolutely. Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Believe me, I don't have a magic wand, but I'm certainly raising my voice about it at Wealth Curve. Yeah. It's something that we are really trying to make sure that people are the right fit for that as the company grows.
Yeah, because it takes a certain skill set, 100%, like a very, and a complex skill set as well. Like, this is, it is that sort of EQ, soft skill, you know, and also sort of that, you know, the hard skills of management that come with it. So, yeah, it's a tough one. A couple of lighthearted questions to bring our talk to a close today. I feel like we've gone through potential recessions, you know, all of those types of topics. But yeah, to bring us to a close, is there anything, Chris, that you are super, super passionate about that you just find unapologetic amounts of joy in, personal, professional, bit of both, one or the other?
No, sure. I mean, I have a busy mind. So I'm passionate about a lot of things. As you can see from what you can see on camera from my room, I'm a huge nerd with a whole bunch of Star Trek stuff and comics and models and things that I collect. I'm really into board games. That became a really big thing, especially during lockdown when we couldn't go out. So my board game collection has become quite insane.
What's your favorite board game?
It's a hard question. Probably Gloomhaven, which is like a dungeon crawling RPG type board game.
Check it out.
And yeah, it's good, but it will eat your life. Like, it takes hundreds of hours to complete. So it's really great now to have friends and family over to play games together again. And like, when we meet up as Wealth Kernel, I tend to have a few games in my bag, and that's become a bit of a culture at Wealth Kernel. And then alongside that, you know, I'm you know, really passionate about diversity, especially LGBTQI+ rights, etc. You know, I'm bisexual, I'm non-binary, I'm really open about that. I talk about it quite a lot. It's a big part of who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for that openness, you know, I did it when I was younger, but now as a senior leader, quotation marks, in the industry, I think it's important to be open about that, to bring more diversity, make people feel more comfortable about being open. And I think it's been good. We have a really strong, diverse team at Wealth Kernel, which is, you know, it's taken a few years to build that up and to, you know, to have that in the back of your mind. You obviously want the best person for the job, but you also want that diversity of opinion and ideas and backgrounds that comes from different experiences, be it, you know, ethnicity or gender or sexuality, whatever, you know. I think that's so important to a company.
And also with Wealth Kernel sort of building a product that's essentially democratizing access to investment, like, you want to be representative of the community that you're operating in and that you're reaching out for. So the only way to do that is through, really focusing on that diversity agenda.
Absolutely. We've got businesses who use us. You know, we've got an Islamic finance company that uses us, a company that focuses on green, climate-focused stocks. So we've got a company that focuses on West African women. So it's like, again, these smaller investment firms that are targeting groups of people that have previously pretty much been left out of the investment world.
Yeah, that's something special for sure. Definitely something brilliant to be part of. So yeah, thank you for sharing that.
No worries.
To bring us to a close today, is there a thought, a value, or a phrase that you live by, Chris?
My favourite quote that has stayed with me for many years is, "All boundaries are conventions," which is from Cloud Atlas by David Mitchell. I don't know if you've read that.
Yeah, I have.
One of my favorite books, and I just it's a phrase that comes into my head most days, and it's we only believe things can't be done because we've told they can't be done, and there are the structures that society that have put up around us, both moral structures or physical structures, and some of them are important, some of them are needed, of course, but others are not. And I think anything like that can be questioned and challenged.
I love that. Amazing. What a way to bring it to a close. Chris, thank you so, so much. I've had such a pleasure chatting with you. It's made my Friday afternoon.
Oh, thank you. It's been lovely talking to you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. No, it's been so great to learn more about Wealth Kernel. And, by the sounds of it, you've really built a company that puts people at the forefront of what you're doing, not just from democratizing access to investment, but also your own people as well. You're remote first, you focus on diversity and inclusion as you're building the company. You're really being intentional about what you're building and scaling, and it just sounds brilliant. And it's been such a pleasure learning more.
No worries, look forward to talking again. Thank you.
Thank you.